The following program may contain content that your kids would love to hear, but you may not want them to.
How old are your kids, anyway? Huh? Are they old? Father of internet broadcasting, internet radio, whatever you want to call it. I'm broadcasting. I'm here. I've always been here in that sense, and I'm here again. When you're a foundation of a medium, you get many titles. I am the bard of broadcasting. I am the pilgrim of productive alternative broadcasting. I am the third man. You figure that one out if you haven't been here. Stacy Lane Wilson awaits, along with a bunch of great words. Stay with us. Ice cap to ice cap, from Hamlet to city, from Othello and into every bordello. Tis I, the man of many names, the man of many, I don't have faces because I'm on radio. I'm here. My name is Frank Cotolo. And in case you don't know, this is Cotolo Chronicles. I am the chronicler. Chronicler? Chronicler. What's the difference between like a broadcaster and a broadcast ear? A buccaneer and a buccaneer. A profiter and a profiteer. Only the English language can define those things. But here we are, Y2K plus 17. And I'm really excited as I could be when I turn on the mic and I decide I'm going to do this again, which it always comes down to the last second. But here I am, and I certainly would not in a million years stand up Stacy Lane Wilson, who's going to be on our show. I say our show like it's yours. I got news for you. It's not yours. It's my show. I chronicle. I'm the chronicler. Stacy Lane Wilson, whose new book, So LA. Lots of talk to Stacy about, because we've walked the same roads in many ways. But she's younger, and maybe she's got some more scars on her than I do. My name is Frank Cotolo. The man whose name adorns the title of the show, and I'm leaning in a different way on this desk, on my broadcasting desk. I can't imagine how I never realized that this particular position I'm in right now, which I don't think I've ever done before, is so relaxing. It's so relaxing that when the mail comes, I don't care, as it just did. But here I am, and you're here too. It's fake entertainment, as it's been known, Y2K plus 17, in this new era of what is real and what is phony, like it ever changed. No, it just changes roles, but it's always fake and real, the battle of fiction and nonfiction. In the case of fake entertainment, yes, the laughs are real, but the entertainment is false. And you know, it's false because it's up to you what to do with all of that stuff. First, my apologies to who? To you. Because I still did not create my subreddit. If anyone knows exactly how to do this, I mean, can give me like an A, B, C, D instruction, write to me, fcotolo@yahoo.com. And I've been promising to make a subreddit for this show so that people could come there, so that I could shove links there and you could, you know, because you're all on Reddit anyway. I'm late to Reddit. This is only the last couple of weeks in my enormously great time that I've been here on, to become the godfather of internet radio. Here I am, not on Reddit. Only recently getting on Reddit, 2017. My God, I don't know when it started. I started before Reddit. Reddit came along and I just let it fly. A man who was on MySpace, a man who was one of the first people to jump to Facebook, a man with a Tumblr, a man with a Twitter, a man, I don't have Instagram, because a man who doesn't, a man not with a smartphone that takes pictures and videos and makes calls and goes to the internet, because it's way too small for that. I'm way too big for that. It's way too small. That's a whole other story. It doesn't matter anyway. What matters is I'm going to make a subreddit, and I keep saying that until I don't say it any longer. That particular time, you will know, because you'll forget about it. And maybe you've already forgotten about it, even though I've said it for 3 weeks in a row. This is Cotolo Chronicles. Wake up. It's night. That's the message, if there is a message. If you don't get the message, it's not a message, because you got to get the message. Maybe you just get the fake entertainment. We will be replenishing our precious bodily fluids on this show. So you'll want to get three. It's a triptych of liquids. It's the triptych of liquids. It's the stuff that you drink. Because dehydration is the enemy. We don't want you to get dehydrated while you listen to this show. Now, you have to remember. You don't have to remember. You could forget it totally. You could not even care about it. But remember this if you want to. Or just hear it now and then forget it. We are one of the first shows, if not the first show, we were the first show to be all talk on internet radio, which is now, it's the love child of all the great podcasters. And we were here way before that. And it was the first. Okay. I'm proud. Am I proud? I don't know. I don't like pride, but I do always say it. And I do. Okay. My point is that no one thought they could listen for 2 hours to just talking, especially in the beginning. I don't know how many shows we did without a guest. Right? Just, or somebody just on a chat box doing talk. And me telling you what they said. But people said, you know what? I can't do this. I will get dehydrated. Just listening gets you dehydrated. So, we called the Department of Health and we said, can people get dehydrated just by listening to some one person talk for 2 hours? And they said, it's highly possible. It's highly Selassie too. So why don't you take 1, 2, 3 drinks, 3 favorite drinks, and to replenish your precious bodily fluids, which will be leaving as you listen. 2 hours is 120 minutes. It's already begun. We're already 7 or 8 minutes into this 120 minutes. It's going to go very quickly, though. So get yourself some liquids if you haven't already. Stacy Lane Wilson is going to be on. Stacy Lane Wilson is has a book out. A book out? She has a book. She wrote a book. Where did that come from anyway? I'm a little tired of all these phrases that are going around now that I never heard and become popular because there's so much media. And so when people say things like push back, used to be take back, always pushing back on that comment. You know, it's not like take it back. They used to say, take it back. You said that, take it back. Pushing back on, so there's that, where did that arrive? And when did people start saying not so much as a second part of a sentence where you say a lot? A comparison of a lot. My dad, for instance, how about this? My dad drinks a lot of beer. My mom, not so much. So like, okay, or however it's used in the metaphor, allegory, allophore, metaphory. It certainly is. When did this start happening? So I'm trying very very, not to, I don't push back. I don't, and then I love, you know, this one. Did you hear Nothing Burgers? Who made this one up? Well, that's just Nothing Burgers. As opposed to bull crap and other forms of turd said in many different words, right? Go to your, thesaurus. Funny how Jurassic Park did not have a thesaurus in it, did it? So, what is Nothing Burgers? I don't like to say all this stuff that everybody says because I'm a natural nonconformist. I was born a nonconformist. It's true. And, that's not the story. This is not the story of me though, but we're going to talk more about the book and the story and even have compendiums to the book. So L.A., a child born of celebrity who ran amok and sometimes walked amok. Stacey Lane Wilson will be here shortly. Her book available on Amazon and all the places where my books are available. Why not make a party at a book buying party? You can go get So L.A. will be. That's my return, which is now acting as. Is now acting as my. I don't know, arm of a, up in my new configuration of sitting, a sit figuration. This is the Hallelujah Trail, and you can get, yes, 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 yes. Here's Stacy going, yes, yes, let me, yes, 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 yes. So a few minutes, baby. Minutes. Minities. I spelled it incorrectly because a few minities. A few minutes. Stacy. Lovely Stacy. Let me tell her that, what is this little box? When an icon doesn't come across, I get a little box. People do this on the stupid little phone I have. The track phone. I try to do a thumbs up icon and I get a little box. I get not a square box. Well, it's a square box, but I mean, it's not a box. It's a perpendicular? No, not perpendicular. It's an oblong. No, it's not an oblong. My name is Frank Cotolo. Man whose name is Jones Italian Show. So LA, Amazon, Frank Cotolo, Sweet Shepherd, Man of La Mantra, License to Skill, and Wordsworth Shelley. And then you go on over to blurb.com. After you've bought So L.A. by Stacy, and you get Molotov Memoirs and more Molotov Memoirs. I was telling somebody about, well, it was last week. Thanks to Dusty Nathan and Dr. Reese. Dr. David Reese. They'll be on again. Who else will be on it coming up? I'll give you this shortly while I'm doing all this junk. To tell you, I've got the subreddit there, okay, and wake up at night because you know it's getting late. It's later than you think. And I still have bruises from this. I had an EMG test. Anyone ever have an EMG test? Let me see. Show of hands. Show of elbows. Show of shoulders. Man, that was fun. there's a bunch of things I'm going to do over the next couple of weeks. And I keep finding time to have these guests and I want to have these guests on. Because you like guests. I know that many of you like the regular drum solo shows with me, Frank Cotolo, just alone. And you're going to get more of those too. I also want you to go to what? Oh, Montreal Jewish News. I'm back there with Political Pulp. There are no political columns as good, as funny, and as fake, and yet as biting as Political Pulp on the MontrealJewishNews.com. It's a wonderful publication. Even if you don't read about the Jewish world in Montreal, the Montreal people, and of course, the True Talk Radio and the whole gang over there where we appear a lot during a week. You'll hear this. You may be listening to this right now on True Talk Radio. And it might be well after we've done the show live, as we do on Thursday nights. But I'm going to have a whole bunch of things. I'm just going to, I'm going to have a clearinghouse of all these things, including some classic Cotolo things. buzzword. What else? Robot calls. We're going to do that. Talk more about this. We did this. We have more. There's more scams. Scams coming up every single day of the week. And other things that, just so much, so much. As long as we're here, we'll be doing all this stuff. And I don't have much else to say about the various things we do and sell. I do want to tell you this, though. Right, and then he finds one. Don't forget, almost heartwarming stories with Grandpa Barry. You got to go there. Every once in a while, I play one, and you should, and we'll have Barry on again. Who else are we going to have on? Dr. Woldar, getting ready to be on the show once he's done with a lot of stuff that's going on with his school. He's a great teacher. I know that because I talked to him, and I've learned a lot from him. What is a good teacher, a great teacher, if you don't learn a lot from him? Did I mention 148.ca/Frank? Because I'm telling you, I'm already into 2018 with those vlogs. You will only be exposed to the ones that they release at SRN Media Works every week, once a week. And that went from being like once a month or whatever to like every week. What will they do, huh? If they told me to do it every day, I'd probably be able to make that deadline because I am astounding when it comes to that stuff. I'm going to get Michael Laskin and I are going to be back again. I'm going to be talking acting. This is hilarious. I'm just going to be me. I'm going to do exactly what he's talked about in his book, The Authentic Actor. I think that's the title. Get his book. You know, we tell you about these books. They're really inexpensive and they're delicious on digitally. So why don't you just go get them? Birthdays are coming up. Easter's coming up. Hanukkah, not Hanukkah. What is it? What's the other one? They're all coming up. No, Hanukkah's the Christmas and Easter is Shalom to everybody. I'm sorry I don't know that. That you're listening on True Talk Radio and I've lost it. I've forgotten. This happens to me because so much is coming through my subconscious, into my conscious at one time. I alone have to edit as it pours through in order to stay at all. Yeah, what's the word? Yeah, it was a jam. It was a jam at all consecutive. It's not the word anyway. I don't know. Heather Drain will be here. Charles Dennis will be back. Angela Gordon and Tom Savino, who, if you're listening live on SRM Media Works, follows this show with Savino Veritas. And if you are a station, I've told you this time and time again, and here's another time coming up again. You can get Tom Savino's show and air it in front of mine and back of mine or another time at all or over and over again all night for all I care and for all he cares because he gets a lot of listeners. Tom Savino, Savino Veritas, just follows this show and the archives are available at juicedtalk.com. Also on juicedtalk.com, our friend and a supporter of this show and someone we founded. We like to say, hey, we founded the Artist D for radio, not for the world, not for the internet, because the Artist D is the internet's first superstore. But we put the Artist D on radio. We didn't put the Artist D on radio, but we inspired, we were the muse. And the hills are alive with the sound of the muse. So there's that. And I'm going to have Tom Savino on again, too, because there's one thing about his show. It's good. It's big burgers. That's right. What's the opposite of nothing burgers? Huh? Everything burgers? My books, we talked about that. We talked about Pinball-O-Rama. Be My Friend. Be My Friend. My Friend. Remember The Godfather? Maybe you don't. Maybe you should watch it. And then you'd always remember it because in the brand. So you be my friend. Be my friend, Godfather. Be my friend. I'm The Godfather Internet Radio, but I'm just saying Be My Friend on Facebook. And you know, I have a Tumblr. What is it? Cotolo Tumbles? What is it anyway? Cotolo.tumblr, I guess, .com. I got to put more into that. I don't, though, because I don't spend a lot of time on social media. But I will answer you if you write to me. Become my friend on Facebook, and I'll answer you if you're going to write to me there. And on where? Twitter, at Frank Cotolo. Social justice warrior. That's not me. I'm just looking at this stuff. I am, of course, also the difficult historian. As I mentioned, I get so many, you get so many names and titles when you're on as long as I am on or have been on and hope to will be on. Hope to will be on? As we move along here, what else? Looking for all sorts of stuff. Leslie Grossnickel. Oh, Weekly World News. You know, if you're into this, it's not available in print anymore, as are not many magazines. So Weekly World News has a website. I absolutely endorse it. Yes, absolutely. Dr. Perry, okay. And I promise you to do that brain show. If I can't find it, I'll do it again. Edward Rothstein's article from the New York Times. This goes back to when? I don't know, many, many years ago. 2004. The show, wow. Here are notes from 2004. Dr. Gerald Edelman. This is a great, I'm going to just do the show all over again. The brain. It's a jungle out there. In there. It's a jungle in there. And that's what all the stuff we're going to do. We're going to get a hold of, and boy, do I mean that. I don't mean that physically, although it sure sounds wonderful. Stacey Lane Wilson, not a member of the famous Beach Boy Wilsons. So don't get upset about that. I mean, don't even get stuck with that. It's not true. But she does have more famous? You can't say famouser, can you? No, you can, but just won't be right. My name is Frank Atolo, the man whose name adorns the title of the show. I'm going to now call Stacey Lane Wilson. I'm calling Stacey Lane Wilson, who is in Los Angeles, California. Can you hear me, Stacey Lane Wilson? Someone picked up the phone.
That was me.
It is you, not was.
It is me. Yes, here in LA.
Present tense. We're live for those of you who listen. Well, it's wonderful to finally hear your voice. I know I've heard your voice.
Thank you.
I shouldn't say that because I've heard your voice.
Did you check out some of my, video interviews online?
I checked out every image of you on your.
Oh my goodness. You wow. Are,
you're just delightful.
And you live to tell the tale.
Well, you know, you and I have lived through a lot, as we will find out.
Yes.
As we will find out as time moves on here. Welcome to the first. I put in a little plug for myself again because Stacey hasn't been around. Welcome to the original internet radio broadcast talk show.
Thank you. Okay. I am honored and proud and happy to be here.
I'm glad to add you onto the roster. And,
yes, because, it's quite impressive.
Have you seen some of the, have you heard some of that stuff?
I did. Yeah. Yes, I have.
And I do want to say before we get started, because we do, we're going to talk about a lot of stuff and this wonderful book, I want to immediately put you into the, category of you will come back even before we do the show.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Because there are people like you and like I and like a lot of the people who guest on this show who just fit into a category of all their own. They always have so much to say about everything, and they've lived a life of, well, I could think of a number of adjectives. Couldn't you?
No, I mean, you're right. And it is, and it's sort of a double-edged sword being sort of a quote-unquote Renaissance person, because you really never focus on one type of career, and you're always kind of have your fingers in different kinds of pies, which is great creatively, but it's all, you know, not always great financially, but
I could list the perks from this show, which is now what, 20 years old. I could list, you know, I mean,
oh my goodness.
And the, yeah. And the people,
I know, I was looking at your archives. I'm just so amazed.
It is
what a great body of work.
Speaking of great bodies, I've yes. I've lived through a number of, you thought I was going that play. I've lived through a number of squeaky events, but here I am still. And I think it, I always think it's always because, not because, but I mean, it's always great that it happens. So I can continue to meet people like you, at least on this level, because we are of the same ilk, of the same tribe in a certain way.
Exactly. And we do have a common bond through a friend that we both knew ages ago.
Yes, absolutely.
That's
absolutely.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And that was
fate.
Yeah,
that was fate.
Yeah, that was very strange. Imagine, in fact, that's what I mentioned last week when I was talking to the audience about your being on. Mm-hmm. And I'd said, because they wouldn't know, you know, and what an odd, what an odd way to connect with somebody who is, you know, who has a background, similar or was, you know, who is connected in some way as you and I have been. I mean, because you're Hollywood and whatever, you know.
Yeah, no, it's wonderful. I think it's great. I love those kind of connections.
And it was only for this, because it didn't make the book, so it's for all this.
Your quote did not make the book. Sorry.
Yeah, what the heck?
Cutting room floor.
That's all right. I got a chance to express myself about him.
You
and,
did.
And that was
wonderful. He was wonderful. Yeah, such a great guy.
Let's talk. Do you know his son?
No, I don't. I only knew his daughter.
Wow, and I didn't know his daughter. I only knew his daughter.
Wait a
okay,
minute.
Well, let's get back. Let's get to the, we got plenty of time, but let's get to it. Stacey Lane Wilson. Now I had to tell everybody because when I mentioned you, not on radio, but mentioned you to a couple of people I know, and actually know people who listen on this, something, the bulk of people I don't know who I've gone through a couple of generations on this show. You realize that?
That's amazing.
They said, well, oh, one of the Wilson daughters. I went, no, not, it's not one of them. You know, it's because of his connections to the Beach Boys and Brian and Carl and everything. But no, I said, no, not one of them. And then when I mentioned your dad, especially to my son, because I, my son, the first song I ever taught my son, is the infamous. No, it's famous. It's not infamous. It's famous. One of the most famous rock instrumentals of all time, Walk Don't Run.
Yes, it is.
It was written by your dad. And I, you know, I mean, when I was a kid, before I could even play, I remember holding the 45. This is well before you were born, young lady.
not too far ahead. But he didn't write the song, but he did popularize it with the Ventures for sure. I think it was a country song or something to begin with.
It's so interesting how
it transformed into what it is now. I believe it was a Chet Atkins song, but I don't even know if he wrote it.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's really got quite a history to it, but the Ventures definitely popularized it and they had the most sales with it. And that's the one, you're right. So many people learn how to play guitar from it.
There are songs that people record and it becomes their song.
Now, just
the fact that I and you, well, you know it because he's your dad, for gosh sake, and you lived through the whole thing. But, for all I know and all I've been in the music industry and everything, no one ever said to me, you know, Walk Don't Run, there's not, a lot of, you know, the Ventures didn't do, what?
Oh, a little known.
Yeah.
Fact, right. And also Hawaii 5-0, which is probably their most well-known song, is not actually, it's not theirs on the television program, but they had such a popular hit record with it because on the TV show, it's so orchestral, you know, and.
Right.
And yeah, the Ventures really venturized it, so to speak, with the guitar sound. And they are really just become synonymous with that song.
Anyone from my era who eventually learned to play guitar or did the band thing or what have you and anything, knew the Ventures and were, and learned something from the Ventures. And they were right before the big singing group. You know, British Invasion and all that.
Exactly. Yeah, and I think the fact that they were instrumental really was so inviting to many budding musicians, to where that was so pure that they could really grasp on to that guitar sound and they wanted to emulate it.
Yeah, my first band used to do, I don't think we did Walk Don't Run, but we did Apache, right? Pipeline, of course.
Wow. Oh yeah, that's a great one. I love the opening refrain to that. It's great.
Just great stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the Ventures. When you were born, well, first of all, we're all talking, and what you're going to hear of comrades and friends and everybody out there, you're going to hear some things that are not in the book, and if you do hear things that are in the book, we're not going to tell you, but believe me, the way it's expressed in the book makes the reading experience stellar. So don't take this conversational thing as if, well, I heard her on the Frank and so I know the book. But you don't know the book. You got to go out and buy the book. I push these people. I push them.
Why, thank you, Frank.
For all the books that are. Okay. growing up, you grew up while your father was in the group, The Ventures. Is that correct? I didn't finish the book. I didn't finish it. I'm sorry. I don't want to interrupt.
Well, you've got a lot to look forward to.
I do.
Just look at it that way.
I know. But, you know, I usually want to learn certain things when people write, who have books are on the show. I learn things about, it makes it fresher for me to ask certain questions.
Yeah, that makes sense. Definitely.
But I am not through with it, but I definitely have started it, as I mentioned. Okay. So you're how old? Are you born and The Ventures exist already?
Exactly, yes. They started in 1959 and I was born in 1966 and my parents divorced shortly after I was born. So I don't know if it was something I said or I don't know. So my dad, he was in and out of my life when I was younger, but being a touring musician, I didn't see as much of him as I would have liked. However, I really got a great education on music and got to see so many great concerts and so it was very interesting childhood for sure. And a lot of my friends knew who The Ventures were. And when I was a young teenager though, I was more into, like you were saying, the British invasion. I loved Led Zeppelin and the Rolling Stones. And so that was more my thing, you know, more vocal groups. And then in the '80s, I got to see so many of the, hair bands, you know, on the Sunset Strip and got to see sort of the birth of Guns N' Roses and Poison and Wasp and all those guys. So I've always really just loved music and especially guitar driven rock. So I feel like it's just in my blood.
Is it possible? I'm trying to now, I have these little, synapses and I'm thinking of a place on Sunset Boulevard. The very famous place on Sunset Boulevard, the club, the big club where everybody plays rock, not rock.
The Whiskey A Go-Go?
The Whiskey, what's the other place?
I don't know. There's a few of them.
Yeah. Name a couple more.
Well, there's Gazzari's isn't there anymore.
No, I knew of
there's
that.
There's the Roxy.
That's it. Maybe it's a Roxy Theater. I kept hearing the Roxy.
The Roxy Theater. There used to be the Starwood, which was owned by, I can't remember his name, but he was the guy who was, connected with the Four on the Floor murders in Laurel Canyon with John Holmes. That's, remember that whole big thing?
So
he owned the Starwood and my dad played there. The Ventures played there with the Go-Go's and, in the '80s when there was sort of that.
There's another one. There's one that's hanging in my memory here somewhere. The Whiskey. Maybe it was the Whiskey. I'm getting the Whiskey and Roxy's.
Or are you thinking of the Troubadour?
Yeah, that's it. Thank you.
Yeah,
thank you.
Yeah, that's on Santa Monica Boulevard.
Oh, that's and why. So, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
They moved it.
That one is a very storied place for sure. I mean, Bob Dylan played there back in the '60s and it's still there, which is great.
The Troubadour's still there. Is it possible that during my, I lost the noun during my wanderings. Let's just say wanderings in the '80s. In the '80s, because when I was connected to radio and people in rock and roll, is it possible anywhere along the line that we brushed shoulders?
It is certainly possible. I wouldn't doubt it.
Because I have certain people on this show and they go, I was there and I was here and I was there. And it's like, wow. And I was like,
I wouldn't doubt it. I mean, did you know Rodney Bingenheimer back then? I mean, he also promoted The Ventures quite a bit.
No, I didn't know him and I can't even spell Bingenheimer, but I like him. I certainly
it's
like
him. It's a cool name though, isn't it? Rodney Bingenheimer. It's like Engelbert Humperdinck, the kind of name that you just kind of like to flow off your tongue.
I don't know. I don't remember a lot of who I knew, but I do know that, we were always going in and out of clubs and going to, we're always eating at places like Mirabelle's. Do you know Mirabelle's?
I don't know.
Sunset?
That one.
Is that still there? Go downstairs into Mirabelle's? No.
Oh, I don't recall having seen it lately, but could be there.
I haven't been there in so long. I have no idea what's changed.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny how some things that are seem so very well established go away, like the Formosa Cafe just closed this year in January, which was pretty shocking to a lot of people, especially those of us who love Hollywood history, such as it is.
I haven't heard that name in a while, but I do know what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's gone, but we still have a few cool places. But, you know, my book, and I strive to connect people with places because I feel like Los Angeles Lewis's history really is not as, it's a bit underappreciated.
Yes.
By those of us, you know, who, even people who live here haven't seen half of what we have to offer, so.
I got a big kick when I finally got out there. I got a big kick because I was, you know, a TV, I'm a baby boomer. So mm-hmm. I remember watching on television, you know, shows like 77 Sunset Strip. You're too, mm-hmm. you're the next generation. You don't, right?
I am it, Gen X, yes.
When it was on, and I remember when I got to, you know, Hollywood, that's where I wanted to go. You know, these places
right?
that I saw in, you know, one dimensional black and white television. And here they were. Because on television, Hollywood is so prominent on television. They use the streets, mm-hmm. they use the, yeah. And there were so many historians there that, are always, film historians, movie historians, because, you know, the business began there. So there were all these places where people would go, like, would take people. Like someone said to me, we gotta go to see the stairs. What, the stairs? What are the stairs? You know, where Laurel and Hardy took the piano up the stairs.
Uh-huh, yeah.
These right. actual places, you know, and you yep, know, yep. although you were probably sure. sometimes as stoned as I was at times not remembering something. Well, like Troubadour. How can I forget the Troubadour? So you said you saw a lot of, even though your father was running around and it wasn't, he was mm-hmm. always your father, but he wasn't, hanging around and stuff. How did you get to see the Ventures? You just waited till they came to like what, the Hollywood Bowl and places and Troubadour, what?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Whenever he was playing in LA, I would be able to go. When I was younger, quite, you know, under 12, I wasn't that interested in going to see concerts. But when I got to be a teenager, I loved to go get out and just see, because he also played double bills with a lot of really interesting bands that I was interested in, like the Plimsolls and the Go-Go's and, mm-hmm. You know, some of those groups that were more kid friendly, I guess you could say. But I didn't really appreciate the Ventures until I got much older. But I feel really lucky to have that legacy for me.
Why? Do you think?
I think it's just because it's such an unusual band. There's really no band quite like the Ventures, and the fact that they're so influential and have influenced a lot of guitarists that I love. I'm a huge Jimmy Page fan. I love Led Zeppelin, and Jimmy Page attributes, you know, my dad's records with him, you know, when he first started playing. So that's really exciting for me.
Yeah, he probably liked you better when you were 12 too. But anyway,
right?
But anyway,
he didn't have a passion for those young groupies. Yes, he did.
But I asked that because it was like, you know, in those days, I remember people being very critical and judgmental. Like they would say things like, "Venture, that's like square. I mean, that's not happening." You know?
Yeah, they did have their ups and downs throughout the decades.
But a lot of groups, kids wanted to be right where it was happening. And, mm-hmm. you know, other groups, look at the slump the Beach Boys went through, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
I saw them, when I was going to college in New York, before I went to California, I saw them at Carnegie Hall. And, you know, there were still tickets left, and it was a wonderful show and everything, but, you know, there was that core group of people who knew about them and everything. And, you know, they were, booed off stage at the Fillmore East.
Really?
So, and that's because people were saying things like, "Oh man, that's like square, you know, if you haven't heard Creedence." And then they'd take groups and they'd you know, make them their own by, you know, the Rolling Stones became the Stones and Creedence Clearwater became Creedence and they all hated one another anyway. But so I was thinking like, well, you're younger. You weren't at all embarrassed, were you? That like, hey, that's my dad and that group
well,
up there. That...
No, I never really advertised it, but you know, but I guess, you know, because I didn't grow up with him, I didn't really, you know, feel that it was a part of my life. But sometimes when, you know, high school friends found out, they were pretty impressed by it. But yeah, I mean, when you're a kid, of course, you're embarrassed of your parents no matter what. So I guess there was that element to it. But like I said, I really do appreciate it now. And the fact that they have such longevity, there's really something to be said for that. I mean, what other band has been touring every single year since 1959 till now. I mean, a few of the members have dropped off the radar, though. I'm 16 under, but my dad is really the last man standing, and he did retire from touring about a year ago, and I got to go to Japan and see, because they're very popular in Japan, being an instrumental group, of course. There's no language barrier. But so it's really, I think it's a wonderful legacy, and I'm really proud of it.
Everyone loved those guitars. Boy, they must have sold a lot of those guitars.
Oh, the Mosrite guitars. The Mosrite. Yeah, that was their sort of their signature sound. But they did play many different kinds of guitars. My dad loved his Fender Jazzmaster, and that's really what he recorded most everything on.
Those Mosrites, though, in the beginning were like, wow. And I remember.
Yeah, they're very different.
And I remember somebody that I knew got one. I mean, he's the only one. I mean, nobody wanted to go near them, as if they were only, I know this sounds stupid, but they were stupid teenagers, you know, playing music.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, no, that's an instrumental guitar. That's like stupid. Like if you saw one of those, it would take away from, you wouldn't really be able to do what you need to do with that, you know.
I don't know how to play guitar, but I hear they have like thinner necks or something like that sets them apart from other types. But
it's a wonderful
they don't make
guitar
them anymore, right?
I don't know if they make Mosrites anymore. They should.
I don't think so.
How many, I don't want to stay, we have plenty of time, but I don't want to stay a whole bunch of times here on The Ventures. I want to talk more about you let's talk about, next here on Cotolo Chronicles, where we're talking with Stacy Lane Wilson. Where's the Lane come from? Is that your mother's maiden? No, it's not your mother's maiden.
No, actually, it's a fellow pinup model, a friend of my mom's that she was, when she first started out, jumping out of cakes and doing nudie cutie photo spreads when she first got to Hollywood. It was just a girl that she worked with, and she liked the name, and Layne, which is kind of a different spelling.
Yeah, I think I might have had, I might have seen your mother.
You might have.
When I was growing up.
Editor.
Yeah.
To the Spank Bank. Who knows?
tell us about your mom, because I mentioned everyone that you have two parents who were in that show business. I'm sorry, it is show business, right?
Exactly, yes. My mom actually ran away from home, from the farm, one of nine children in Ellensburg, Washington, when she was 14 years old. And went to Las Vegas and actually became a showgirl and hung out with the Rat Pack. And then she eventually made her way to Hollywood and was in a few B-movies. But she had a really just a storied, fun, crazy, wild life. She had affairs with Errol Flynn sort of at the end of his life and the beginning of hers. And Hugh O'Brien and...
Oh, geez, there's a jump.
Yeah.
Right? Errol's daughter was on this show a number of years ago.
Really?
Yeah, when she wrote, his youngest daughter, who wrote a wonderful book with tons of pictures in it. You hear so much, I've heard so many stories about you, the Wyatt Earp guy, right? You...
Mm-hmm, exactly, yeah.
What's his last name?
Hugh O'Brien.
O'Brien. Yeah. Okay. So your mother, Errol. Okay. Errol was a wild guy. I have no idea about Hugh O'Brien, but
It sounds like it from her memoir. Sure. Actually, my memoir and her memoir are simultaneously released and kind of go hand in hand. Hers is called Legends and Lipstick.
Oh wait, I got to write this one. Yeah. How did I miss that? It wasn't in the beginning of your book. They didn't say anything, did it?
I might have mentioned it, but it's called Legends and Lipstick.
It sounds familiar.
And it's by Nancy Bacon. Yeah, it's pretty wild. She had an affair with Paul Newman. She was the other woman in all the tabloids in the late 60s. Yeah.
Oh, hey, how do you have another affair after Paul Newman?
Right?
Errol Flynn, an old Errol Flynn is better than a young Hugh O'Brien, but a Paul Newman is a Paul Newman all the way. Wow. Nancy?
And even Tommy Smothers. Yeah, I mean, she certainly got around, but she had fun doing it, that's for sure. She always had a great attitude about it, I think, and she never hid any of that from me when I was a kid. So I always just kind of grew up knowing about the wildlife and, you know, it just kind of part of my identity, I guess.
Yeah, well, that makes a lot of sense, considering how we relate to our parents. And, you know, the legends of our parents and what they give us. So what you're saying, I don't want to give anything away from the book, but what you're saying, as Stacy, you're saying, hey, my mom came in with all these guys. No, you didn't. And so I
this was before my time.
Oh, okay.
I gotta
read
her
book.
I wasn't like a, you know, a revolving door and a, you know, bordello decor in our house, but I had a pretty stable, little childhood in the younger times. But, you know, and then we moved out actually to the valley, and my mom, having grown up on a farm, was very intent on making sure that I connected with nature. So I had horses in the backyard in Tarzana, and I'd ride them up and down, you know, Ventura Boulevard. And so it was very sort of a interesting way to live. I mean, I loved animals always from the time I could talk. I mean, I was asking for a
girl.
Pony.
Girls love animals. Come on.
Right? Yeah, I know. And I got one. And actually, my first pony was one of Cal Worthington's dog Spots, and he was sort of one of the...
You
know who that is, yeah.
Yeah, you don't want to go over the heads on lots. There's so many people. I'm going to tell everyone again that they know to do this, okay? They're always... Everybody has your Cotolo Chronicles notebook, and that's either, you know, one of these Mead school notebooks, or it's a whatever it is. When you hear a name and you hear something that we laugh at, what the audience does is they write it down, and I can't annotate, you know, everything we talk about. We have such a young audience. They go out later and they start searching these things on their engines. So
they definitely should. Definitely YouTube a Cal Worthington commercial. Ford, Cal Worthington Ford, and his song. Oh my gosh, yeah, that song though will haunt you forever. I think it's almost worse than It's a Small World, Disney.
And here's Cal Worthington and his dog Spot. He had a dog in all of his commercials.
Right, yeah, but they weren't really dogs. Actually, they were usually exotic animals, but this pony was so mean, he might as well have been like a rampaging rhinoceros or something. He bucked me off more times than I could actually sit on him.
And Mom had, Mom was making a pretty darn good living.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, she was a gossip columnist when I was younger, because she had actually quit her pinup modeling after she had me, but she was actually one of the second female editor of Confidential magazine, which is quite the coup.
Yeah. Confidential magazine, yes.
Yes.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Well, wow. They don't even have a website. They've been gone while they were still.
They have been gone quite a while. But yeah, I think they should revive them. They're definitely right in line with all of the tabloid TV and all the shows today. I mean, I think Confidential is really the granddaddy of them all.
It is, or was. And I imagine there might be, I can imagine if you go to eBay, I mean, people must be selling things, or there must be other ways to find. Mm-hmm. Write that down, everyone. Write this down quick. Confidential magazine. There's another thing to look for.
You'll get an eyeful for sure. It was called, their slogan, I think, or their tagline was, "The one that names names."
Wow. The other night, I saw, have you seen FX, one of the Fox drama mentries or whatever they call them, called The Feud, about
I would love to see that. It's, you know, sort of the birth of the hagsploitation genre with and Joan, right?
Betty,
that yet.
Oh, okay, because, you know, they're probably all there on demand or cable or something like that. I was watching that, and I love to watch those type of recreations. Not just for what's going on, but for how the art direction takes control of everything around them. You know, she's driving to work in a big yellow Cadillac, and it's like, wow, that's like a 52 Cadillac, you know, or a 16.
Right? I mean, could you imagine Betty Davis driving a smart car?
No.
It just doesn't work. So, I mean, I think that they're so entrenched in that era. It's so perfect. Yeah, I've seen stills from it and some clips. It looks absolutely deliciously decadent. I can't wait to catch up with it.
You should, definitely. It's right up your alley. And speaking of your alley, let's talk more about you got your mom and your dad in perspective. How does Stacy suddenly decide to be glittery? What's your first dream you have about partaking in the Hollywood fabric?
Actually, I mean, it's always been in my DNA, so I can't really say that it was a conscious decision to start something that's entertainment related, but I always loved to write, and that was really my first love, was writing books and stories. And yeah, it took me, I feel like, you know, quite a while to get published. I had some books published in the early 2000s, and from there it kind of spiraled into writing movie reviews, because I had sent one of my horror anthology books to some editors of horror websites. And that's back when websites were the low man on the totem pole, so to speak. Right. I mean, very disrespected. It was like the low. So I really got in on the ground floor of being an entertainment journalist. So I did red carpets on camera, and I did press junkets, and I've talked to just about, you know, you name any movie star that made a movie from 2001 till now, and I've interviewed them.
They're on your reel.
But it's all been, yeah, and it's all been through, yeah, online. I worked for the Sci-Fi Channel. So I just feel like it was sort of a natural fit, but being an entertainment reporter definitely was not in my career plan. It was just something that sort of found me, and I had an aptitude for it.
What do you have to do with Big Ass Spider?
What don't I have to do with that?
Yeah, because you've done other things in movie. Because I remember that being on at one point. And I've talked about sci-fi. I've talked about sci-fi, the Sci-Fi Channel here, in a very strange way. How it helps the economy, because it continues to manufacture things and give so many people work. There's so many people working because of, you know, making a living because of these movies they make. And, you know, and making that, and the way they mix crocodiles with octopuses and make octopiles and, you know, all the stuff that they do.
Oh, sure. Yeah. It's kind of the natural evolution, so to speak.
From
the Nature Strikes Back movies of the 1970s and the Roger Corman sort of
even the 50s.
Of filmmaking, the low budget thing.
It owes so much to a lot of those real, you know, 50s.
Night of the Lepus, although I think that was the 60s, but I love that one, Toads, or, you know.
Even, well, I'm going.
What was it, that They Live, and.
Wow, I'm going further back than that. I can't believe I'm going to, you know, it the Terror from Beyond Space, It Conquered the World, and you know, those real ones.
Exactly, it's the same thing, just in a different packaging.
So what I'm saying is, so I see this, and I went, boy, isn't this a way to make modern, you know, a giant spider? Because there were movies like, you know, Tarantula, and the ant, for the ants, okay? But here's what would your title today's? You couldn't even say ass in those days. No, let's put it in a title.
That's true. Yeah, I know.
Big Ass Spider,
I think, when they started making it. But yeah, my friend Mike Mendez actually directed that film. So initially I was just called in to be a cocoon victim, just kind of lay there and wrapped in a cocoon and get rescued by the heroes, just as a favor. I'm definitely not at all interested in acting or being in front of the camera in that capacity. But that was fun. And so, yeah, I've just kind of recently did a revival interview with the cast, because the movie was re-released on National Save a Spider Day. So I can't seem to shake that spider. I don't know.
Big Ass Spider. I love it. I love it. Because I would think of somebody walking in the room, going, what are you watching? Hey, I'm watching Big Ass Spider.
Yeah.
You know,
the name says it all.
As opposed to Large Penis Elephant or whatever. I have
oh,
no
my goodness.
Idea.
Well, that's next.
Yeah. But on your reel, on your site, what's your website again? Give it, is it just Stacey Lane? I forgot, because
That's right. It's StaceyLaneWilson.com, right? And it's StaceyLaneWilson. So a little unusual spelling, but that is me.
They wrote it down, and we will tell them again, time and time again, this being one of the times, and again, we will do that so that they can go watch the reels, and you could see what, Stacey has done. In interviewing, you're there with a lot of, high profile, some A, I don't know who's A-list or B-list, what have you, but you, now, was that it's way after I left Hollywood. I haven't been there in years, but that show, you had one of those shows. Was that entertainment? What were you connected to when you were doing those shows? with the interviews.
Yeah, well, I did work for the Sci-Fi Channel, so they, you know, disseminated as they saw fit. But I also hosted and produced a few online on-camera talk shows, Inside Horror and This Week in Horror, and lots of horrors.
A lot of horrors.
Dread Central Live, yeah. But we had a lot of really great guests. I mean, we did have Roger Corman on as a guest, which was a great thing for me because he is definitely one of my heroes, especially his late 1960s Poe films, you know, with Vincent Price.
Sure.
I absolutely adore. One of my all-time favorite actors is Vincent Price, but unfortunately I never did get to meet him. But I got to interview Roger Corman, and we had Joe Dante on, who did, you know, Piranha.
Joe Dante.
Sort of the name.
Yeah. Oh, Joe Dante has been mentioned on this show many times.
Yeah, he's great.
Because he was part of a little club that we had in Hollywood way back when he was still doing, I don't know if he was still doing Corman's back then. But Joe.
He did work for, he cut trailers for Roger Corman, and then he got the opportunity to direct.
Piranha, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, Piranha, that was his first movie, I'm pretty sure, yeah.
And he did some wild voice tracks and stuff in a little club, but we had, which involved drugs and old movies, but that's a long story and it's not yours. We're on to you right now.
I never did get into drugs, but I love old movies. They are my drug.
Oh, now this really, you know, we could admit everything here. This is Cotolo Chronicles. My name is Frank Cotolo, man is the name of Dorian's the title of the show, and Stacy Elaine Wilson. Yeah, it's amazing how you just got on mic and fit right in here.
Yep.
Why don't you
quite at home?
You need to, I don't want to say what do you do now. That's for later. Let's get back to the young girl who becomes gets involved in, the rock scene. I haven't gotten to the parts of your book that get tawdry and,
Oh, really? I spent a lot of time with my fake ID at the Rainbow. That was my hangout, the Rainbow Bar, which is where, you know, I was always hoping to have a Jimmy Page or Robert Plant sighting.
But you never did.
I did have a Jimmy Page sighting, a sighting. Yeah, and then I got to interview him later on a professional level, which is probably better. You know, I prefer that, to have that in my, that feather in my cap rather than winding up as one of the many groupies, nameless, faceless groupies. I got to interview him for It Might Get Loud, the documentary that he did with Jack White, who's another one of my favorite guitarists. So that was very interesting. And that book. The Rainbow was a great place, and I did actually have a really fun encounter, I guess you could say, with their road manager, Richard Cole, who was just always sloshed and dodging all of his arrest warrants in the UK. And my friend Peg became his designated drivers whenever he needed to go home at the end of the night, and that was fun. And I hung out with Motley Crue and the guys from Metallica and stuff like that. But I never really was a groupie. I wouldn't say that I was out to bag the famous guys. That wasn't my thing. I was more interested in talking to them and observing what they did. And because I am at heart a writer and a journalist.
Please don't think or walk away when you do walk away from this, this talk we're having. Don't think I'm trying to get you to say anything based on who, I'm not looking to do that. I'm not a kiss and tell person. I have been offered.
My book is definitely, I would say that my book is definitely entertaining, but it's a little outside the norm.
Yeah. And that's good because that's the audience it will attract. I tell stories to people who don't even believe the stories, and there's so many stories I haven't told, because even to close friends, if I don't trust them, I don't like kiss and tell stories. Because you know as well as I do that when you start, if you start hanging out, if you're one of those backstage, you know, one of those people who have the pass. When I got to Hollywood, someone said to me, "Look, there's only two types of people in this town: those who are on the list and those who are off the list." So get on the list if you want to stay. Right. You know as well as I do that when you're on the list, you are exposed to things, even if it's not a personal experience. I mean, you're exposed to things that are, I mean, just not talked about or even in confidential magazines. I mean, they make up things that aren't as bad. I don't want to say bad. I'm not going to judge it. I mean, things that happen, right?
Absolutely. I mean, I have to say that some of the most interesting sort of people watching experiences that I've had are been backstage. I mean, one of my stories that I tell in the book is being backstage after an Angeline concert. By the way, she's still around. She was just driving behind me in traffic the other day.
No one who isn't from LA knows.
knows Angeline. Sort of an LA icon.
And yet
she must be seen to be believed. So that's another one for your Googles people.
Yeah, you say that, and I'm like, you know, driving down Sunset Boulevard and I'm looking at that. How long was that poster, the billboard there?
The billboards. I know. And we're still trying to figure out, like, who was her sugar daddy? And some people think that it might have been Dr. George Fishbeck, the weatherman, who was very married and seemingly straight laced, but that's a rumor. George, so I don't know. She never revealed who put up those billboards.
I love these names.
They were quite entertaining.
I love these names popping out at me personally. I know, right? That everybody, if you will still enjoy the book if they don't bring back the electric.
No, I do explain who everyone is in the book. I try, because actually when I was writing the book, I had some beta readers from.
Yeah.
Other countries, actually. I had one, you know, young girl who's in her 20s who lives in England, and then I had another person in Australia. So I wanted to make sure that my book would be relatable to anyone, but still feel very LA. I don't want to be too insider, but it is. I mean, it does have that flavor to it, but they helped me, you know, explain this or that. I mean, my friend in Australia didn't know what Uber was, and that Uber is very popular here. You know, when you're from somewhere, you just kind of write about the things that are here without sometimes thinking, oh yes, Uber is not in Australia. So there's just a brief explanation. So
that's good.
Flavor to the story. Yeah.
And my audience knows me because I tell tales of tales. They know that, so many of these things hit me, but especially when I talk to people like you, I mean, even no matter what I did today, thinking about what we would talk about, the name Angelina never came to mind.
Really?
So I get shocked again when you bring up these things and I go, holy crap, how did I, wow, that like.
Right? Angelina, the billboard queen. She's our girl.
Crazy stuff here.
Yeah.
But it's great. Well, we're going into our second hour here with no breaks because we don't have breaks because we don't, do that kind of stuff. And we're going to not allow anybody to go. You're going to have to just go off to the bathroom and come back if you're listening live here on Cotolo Chronicles. We're with Stacy Lane Wilson, whose book is called So L.A. You know, every time I hear that, I just think the Valley Girl, you know, a voice comes in. That's So L.A.
Right.
And Stacy, who's a grown-up and still lives there. You haven't lived anywhere else? I mean, after?
I have not. Even though I've traveled the world, I've been all over, you know, Europe and Asia and Canada and pretty much this nation. But I have always lived here and loved living here. So hopefully, as long as I can afford it, I'll be sticking around.
I lived a couple of places in L.A., you live in we're not going to give out any addresses though. I mean, you live in the Hollywood area or are you out in the Valley or somewhere?
Yeah, I'm in the Valley.
Okay.
And, which is a suburb of Hollywood. It's only like, 15-20 minutes.
That 101. Right over.
The old 101. Okay, yeah.
101 right over there.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to stay in touch. Some people I think would be really fascinated, that you should hook up with one way or another, writing and what have you, from there. We're not from there, but
I'm always open to
in the genre,
meeting people. That'd be great.
Of writers and those movies and stuff and things. You've also done, I was only able to, you know, actually involve myself along the road of the ridiculous things I've done. Videos, because videos weren't as big as they were when you were involved. But you've done, have you directed or did you, what did you do with some of those music videos you've done for people? It's on your,
I have done a few music videos. I did a couple for the Ventures, actually. I did one in honor of their 50th anniversary called Beethoven 5-0, which was fun. Yeah, it was really great. And then really, written and directed two feature-length horror films.
Yeah, let's talk about those.
My first one, Fetish Factory, just got picked up for distribution, so I'm excited about that.
Give me that title again. I talked over you.
Fetish Factory.
Fetish Factory. I saw clips of that. Okay. I was wondering where that.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. And how did that come about? What's the name of the other one? You said?
Good Family Times. And that one is a home invasion thriller with sort of a supernatural twist.
How did these come about in terms of your writing?
Through my hosting the horror talk show. I had the actor Michael Biehn on the show, and he was recognized the name. He was in Aliens and the Terminator. He was, in the first Terminator film with Arnold Schwarzenegger and The Abyss. And Tombstone. That's probably one of my favorite. He plays Johnny Rango in Tombstone. So he was on the show to talk about his new production company, and he brought his wife on, who's his co-producer, and her name is Jennifer Blanc. And she is really so giving and generous about giving not only new filmmakers, but female filmmakers a forum. Mm-hmm. And so she had, we just met on the show and there was no talk about me doing anything, and I didn't ask because honestly, I never really thought about doing a feature film. But a few months later, she had asked me for some links to my short films. And really what I do when I want to make something for myself creatively is more expressionistic. I like Maya Deren and, Louis Buñuel and sort of those very artistic films. So, she actually asked to see some of my shorts, which are definitely not horror, but she looked at them and I didn't even think anything of it. And then about 6 months later, she, got back to me and asked if I wanted to make a feature.
So direct, you mean?
That's right. Yes, write and direct. And so I wrote and directed this. They kind of give me a basic idea. Mm-hmm. And it's about burlesque dancers fighting bloodthirsty zombies on one post-apocalyptic Hollywood night. So it's perfect for me. I loved it.
I like how you create the scenes and you're very illustrative about them and then deny your involvement. Yeah. I love that. That's great. That's good image. That's good. You've learned a lot about.
They gave me the basic idea. They wanted hot chicks fighting zombies. So, but I got to sort of curate the characters a little bit more to my taste, which I really love the freedom that Jennifer and Michael gave me in doing that. So each character is based on sort of a vintage Dixon pinup. I've got a Betty Page girl who's played by Carrie Keegan, and then Jennifer plays a Jane Mansfield type, and we had a Rosie the Riveter girl, and so it was, it's goofy fun. It's very throwback. It's very Grindhouse-esque.
Do you know, I know you know of, but maybe you know Linnea Quigley?
I sure do. I don't know her personally, but she was one of my favorite actresses when I was watching, horror movies in the 80s. She's
great. She went on to, now I wrote the first line she ever said in a movie.
Really?
And I've been trying to, even though I get her, maybe she's holding this against me because on Twitter, I'm following
her. Line?
And I write to her directly on Twitter, although I know some people don't read their own Twitter thing. And I said, Linnea, it's me. And I mentioned the thing and I said, hey, would you be on my show? Because, this is the kind of audience, and I can't, I just can't get her to answer me, man. But she's that whole genre. And the reason I bring this up is because that whole genre, when you were a child, was really produced because there was an entire circuit of drive-in theaters. There was the drive-in theater. I don't know what they graded. Mm-hmm. So they see movies or whatever. I don't know.
I don't know.
And whatever. That whole area. But since then, of course, cable has, come out. There's so much content on cable now and streaming through all the internet and places. So where does Fetish Factory, you said, was just picked up? Where does that fit in and where is that going in terms of more a bigger audience?
Oh, it definitely is. Even though I feel like it's a crowd movie, it's definitely like a Rocky Horror type movie that should be. It's definitely a midnight movie type thing.
Right.
But aside from assorted film festivals, I'm sure that it will mainly be seen on streaming, avenues, and definitely DVD when the time comes. But these things always take so much time, but, I think it's a lot of fun, but I kind of, part of me, you know, the creative soul of me feels like, ah, too bad. Like someone's going to be watching this on their phone all alone. It's not the same experience, you know, cause it's comedy. It's like really pretty high.
They all teeter on the brink of being, you know, absurd. But the reason I said that was because, a couple of months ago or maybe a year ago, what have you, I was surprised on one of these channels, one of these cable channels, not a pay channel either, not a pay channel, only to see a movie, which was one of these type of movies called Lesbian Vampires. What, did you ever see that? Do you know about that one?
I know Vampiros Lesbos, it's like a French-Spanish
production
from the early 1970s.
This literally, I think Jenna Jameson was in it. And it was not a porn.
I have interviewed her, but I have not.
It's not a porn movie, but you know, it's one of those.
Oh, it's not.
It's one of those TNA monster things.
Okay, yeah.
And I was shocked to see it. And I said to myself and to friends, I said, you know what? This could be the opening of this. This could be the first one that this could, you know, open the gates for so many other type movies like that. Not that I'm comparing it to Fetish Factory, but it certainly seems that if that could be on, there would be lots more that were being made and on, and yet not. I mean,
things are, especially in horror, things trend, you know. I mean, we had the Japanese horror phase for a while, and then the supernatural sort of insidious phase.
Yeah, but cable now is so hungry for content, and there are so many of these things hanging around. You'd think there'd be well, there's the Sci-Fi Channel. I mean, would those movies, those TV, would they ever be made if there wasn't the Sci-Fi Channel, that didn't have a direct outlet to project those to an audience, right?
I agree. Yeah. No, I don't think so.
So, yours qualifies as sci-fi too. What would be, the problem of getting, that more distributed on, in those kind of places? Or is the streaming thing now taking over? Because there's television, there's streaming, it's one big thing.
Oh, I know. Yeah. There's so much. I'm not sure. I mean, actually, I'm more on the creative side of things, so I don't know that much about the, getting down to the brass tacks of distribution and that, but I'm sure there's these kind of things find a life of their own, right, if they're worthy. Mm-hmm. So I can only hope that it definitely, that it's got the makings of a cult classic, but we'll see.
I don't know what worthy means when it comes to phenomenon, because, you know, you can't create a phenomena. It just, that's the very nature of the definition.
No, exactly.
You know? So, but to get it on, it seems.
Just to get people to see it. Yeah, it's difficult. I'm glad I don't have to do that part.
You sound just like me. You know, you put together this giant. I have a book now that I have not told anyone about. I've worked on it, and it's out there. I didn't want to publish it myself because I published, you know, a bunch of my junk, but I got this one. I really think I got something, you know, so it's out there and I'm just don't understand. It's the same thing. I don't understand how to do this, but to give it to the people who do it. And even that confuses me. So I was like you're saying, because you've spent so much time putting the piece together, you know, creating the monster. Once you got them, you don't know what to do with them. Speaking of monsters, this is Cthulhu Chronicles. And we're with Stacey Lane Wilson, who has become a member of our, I think she approved it, a member.
I do. Are you going to send me a card so I can carry it?
I'll send you a card and a autographed card. I'll send you a card. And we'll, because there's so much to talk about and comment about, why don't you, I don't think you do. I don't think you have how come you haven't gotten a podcast or something put together that keeps Stacey Lane Wilson doing the kind of things you could probably attract any number of stars.
There's only so much I can do.
Well, what else are you doing right now?
What else am I doing? I'm just laying around here eating bonbons, you know, having my feet rubbed. I'm a freelance writer too, yeah. So I do just every kind of writing you can imagine. So
I can imagine, and I do know, it because I've done it. That's exactly yes. what I've done for years since I got out of here. But then when we go back to your what's it like? Because your mom, you know, what point do you know what your mom is doing? I mean, she's your mom. You're there, and your mom's out doing various things. With how much contact do you have with her in terms of her being out there doing things? Because a lot of it, when you're younger, you can't be there.
No, well, I'm too young to remember most of that. I mean, she had an affair with.
Well, I'm not even Paul mean Newman, those.
And then I was like two years old. I don't know.
I don't mean those things. I mean your mom's out there as a. She's out there.
Gossip columnists and stuff. Well, actually, you know, the book takes a bit of a dark turn, though. You have to read on and find out, Frank. Okay. But it does. She was actually diagnosed with breast cancer in the early 1970s, and she had a radical double mastectomy, which, of course, is crushing to any woman. But someone who looked like my mom with that physique was really tough. And then she spiraled into alcoholism, and that was a really hard part to write about. Because as a child, it was very up and down, very, you know, either like everything was great or everything was horrible. And my mom really tried to be a good mother, but there were some rocky parts. And when she read my book, actually, I was kind of nervous. You know, I mean, even though I'm old as dirt, I still care what my mom thinks.
Old as dirt.
So
I like that. What does that make me? Dust?
Right? So anyway, I was a little nervous, though, I gotta say, that because the book is quite candid. I will, you know, I'm laughing about it, but it's a pretty dark times. And I did talk about some of the things that she did that were pretty, not nice things to do to your daughter.
Let's let people read that.
She actually appreciated my candor and the fact that I always tried to show her side of it, and that actually she did kick alcoholism. And so she rose above that. So I think, you know, to use sort of my movie maker parlance, she has a great character arc. So she appreciated that.
Well, we'll let, I guess what I was getting at, and I want people to read all this stuff because it is a dynamic book. And that is, it's not just Stacy skipping through Hollywood telling you about all the people she knows. It's not that. And it does. Indeed, get into her. I was going to say, that was a bad way I was going to put it. Gets into her past in terms of her lifestyle. But that's what I was talking about. So you were too young, but when your mother was well and working and stuff, then, I mean, how much older is your mom than you?
She was 26 when I was born, but you got to remember, she ran away from home when she was 14.
Yeah,
so
but
she was doing some really wild things in the late 50s and early 60s.
Yeah, well, you're 10 when she's 30.
I wasn't.
She's 36. Pardon? She's 36 and you're 10, right?
No, she was, right. Yeah. So at that time, well, she had her mastectomy when she was 31 years old. So she was pretty much out of commission after that. She really spiraled into a depression.
Okay.
And she lost a lot of her income. I mean, she couldn't work because back then, as I did a lot of research on these things, because back then when you're living it, you don't really think about it. And of course, when you're a kid, it's not something you think about. But how the surgeries were done back then in the early 1970s was just brutal.
Yes.
I mean, they just cut out all of your muscles, and she couldn't hardly lift her arms to the typewriter. So it was pretty tough.
I didn't get the chronology there, but now I understand that.
Yeah.
Now I understand that completely. And let's leave your writing to be the description when people read about that. And when I get to that point, I'm certainly just happy that that through everything you've been through, just like I'm happy that everything I've been through, although it might not, it doesn't pale by comparison, but there are similarities that we have made it to be able to be here, because those were rougher times. I don't know. The generations today are, people in our generation and your generation too are very hard on the digital generation, the millennials, let's call them millennials, you know, when they're just going through their trials and adventures the way we did.
Their own, crosses to bear, so to speak. But that reminds me of a really funny thing I saw on Twitter earlier today. I can't remember who wrote it, but it said, you millennials, you're always whining about your health care. You know, back in my day, we just died.
Right. Yeah. There's a lot of humor that can come out of that stuff. Take it from me.
No, absolutely. I mean, yeah, in my book, I talk about, you know, how dangerous kids' toys were in the 1970s. Oh, you know, yeah. We had the slip and slides and the jarts and, you know, I mean, like we were definitely courting death every day that we went out to play.
I've done any number of stories of me growing up in Brooklyn, New York, in the 50s with, the whole atmosphere of being a child then, that incorporated so much, cruelty, the things today that nobody would stand for it, you know, when we were living through that and understanding it and we were playing. You know, it's like
and my mom, I remember she would drive with, me and my friends on the hood of the car. Like, really?
Right?
Thanks, Mom. Holding on to the windshield wipers and we thought, oh, that's really fun.
But also in those days, cars could withstand, they were strong enough to withstand that.
Well, that's true. there was a nice hood to lay on.
It just comes apart today. But, now in your, let's talk about you as a writer, for a moment here and talk about your inspirations. And, because we all do that, we all start, you know, before we find our voices as writers, we all start admiring and imitating and, doing whatever we have to do. Who would you count as writers who you just admired to the point that it has influenced how you express yourself in paper?
I was always a really voracious reader. That's one thing that my mother definitely encouraged, and I was allowed to read all of her books. So when I was quite young, I was reading Hollywood Babylon, you know, by Kenneth Anger, and reading Erica Young. So, you know, I knew about the simplest fuck when I was 12.
Whoa, Eric, there's another name.
I know, right?
Popped out.
But no, I think that really did help inform me as someone who's very curious about life and people. And I always loved stories about people, whether it's fiction or nonfiction, but I have always sort of gravitated toward memoirs.
Now that's that's a great writer because of course characters drive all fiction. Characters drive good fiction. So.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So I think that, you know, that definitely the books by, Erica Young were very interesting, but I also read, you know, the books that all kids get into, like Tolkien and, you know, the Anne Rice books and those, but,
generation. Yeah, that's your generation.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, it's only when you say that, right, the Anne Rice was, sure, I understand that. So, but there, anything, in a classical, sense, or, cause those are all really pop, and you know, some of them are excellent in their genres, but what about in school? Anything classical hit you?
I did love John Steinbeck's The Red Pony because I loved horses, of course. Yeah. But yeah, anything that had animals in it. You know, I loved The Yearling. That was a great book.
Mice and Men
is actually one of my favorite books.
All these California, I mean, Steinbeck is California. You like, of Mice and Men, which has no mice in it at all. You like
animals. That's a great book too. I know.
No mice at all. But all that California.
We got gypped on that one.
All the California stuff.
I mean, Raymond Chandler was also a favorite of mine. I absolutely love noir. So I read, all of him, Dashiell Hammett. I loved Sherlock Holmes when I was a kid. Stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah. I always found, Doyle, the Sherlock Holmes, difficult. I mean,
really?
Classic English, the British, you know, English literature. Like I loved Thomas Hardy, but it was not easy reading. I mean, it was so fascinating. And then I lived in England for a bit. And I realized someone told me, I had to write comedy and it was amazing. I had to have a tutor at the time because, you know, American comedy is so different.
Oh, it's so different.
And
I never really understood Monty Python. I remember they were quite popular
and the language,
when I was a teenager and I couldn't really ever connect.
And someone told me, they said, I'm not going to do the accent, said, you don't understand, Frank, but We're two countries separated by the same language.
And that, yeah, that's
so
interesting.
That was like so true. So reading this, lot of the stuff I love to read, I found very difficult because they're so verbose. Everything they do, you know?
Yeah.
So
I think it was probably more the mystery aspect of it. And once again, going back to the characters who are so indelible. I mean, Sherlock Holmes was just such a irascible fella. I really enjoyed his attitude.
Did you ever try to read one of those books and then you realize there was a movie of it and you said like, well, hell, I'll just watch the movie.
No, I do both.
Right, that's what I would do. You see the movie in between a book, and they'd go, now you're going to read the book? You just saw the movie,
yeah.
as if it's a replica. We're here with Stacy Elaine Wilson. That's Stacilayne.
Yeah, that's correct.
N-E. Wilson, as in Wilson. And that's the name, that's the URL.com of her website where you can go see her reels. That show a lot of the things she's done, a lot of the interviews she's done and who she's been with in those interviews and other stuff that's there, pictures, books, and links to various other places. And her book, which we are now endorsing, with all of the might we have and hopefully our muscle, for being here for 20 some odd years. So LA. So LA. What about when you go to, when you've gone to other places? You said you've been, you've traveled around.
I have.
What do you see? Because I always thought LA, you know, when I got there, it was a very strange thing because people used to, you come from the East, you go to LA and right away, you know, they're telling you all these things. People who've never been there are telling you how horrible it is by comparison, right? Because they're so big and mighty in the East. And you know, there's something about LA. And yet when I remember the first step I took off of plane, it happened to be out in the tarmac. I don't know why that was where I landed, whatever, but it wasn't into one of those, didn't go straight into the terminal. Mm-hmm. But I remember just the feel of it as I put my foot down, the whole feel of LA, and I went, well, I'm home, which is very weird for a New York person, and they've always had this very strong sense of LA as an actual place, not at all the way a lot of people complained about it in the East, right? Now, I didn't grow up there and nothing like that, but I always felt, well, LA has its own history. LA has its own world. I've read a lot about it. I love the Spanish influence and everything, but it's growing up there, and you go to other cities that really don't. Have you found anyone saying, oh, you're from LA all your life? I mean, you know, people look at it like...
It is rare. People are usually interested in finding out about it, but I have had people that I've known through either writing letters or connecting in some other way or meeting them on their own turf come here to Los Angeles, especially people from Europe, and they're so surprised at how sprawling it is because it's not a concentrated city where you can look at... you know, one portion of it and say, oh, that's New York. I know that. Or that is, Tokyo or, you know, it's really, you have to cover so much ground to really get the full LA experience. And there really isn't any one thing about it. That's what I love about it is the variety of it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's actually a compliment for people to say, what a sprawling place. That's nice. I mean, That reeks of diversity and, you know, and variety and stuff and not like, oh, those, oh, they're all so laid back. And even when I got to LA, I tried not to, make everyone think I was just another person off the bus or so to speak, you know, and then I got into but I didn't realize that. When I went and asked for something at a diner and I said, but, yes, I'll have some, I'm being very careful about how I speak. Oh, I'd like to have some scrambled eggs and of course a cup of coffee. And because and they immediately pointed at me like, oh, you're one of them.
The buzzers the alarms all went off.
right. And I felt so bad. I was like, gee, I was trying so hard. And then after living for years in California and I go back to New York and they go, well, you don't talk the same at all. You don't talk the same at all. Who are you? What have you become? And they look down on me because I've become this, what? A person who speaks with, you know, pronounces words correctly. Hello. They're so stuck up. I have it's a long history about where I.
I don't think we have that here. Yeah. We're not so elitist. I think we're very welcoming to anyone and everyone who wants to come hang out and play.
And there are so many people who live in L.A. and make their lives in L.A., make their careers in L.A., doing a lot of things, not just entertainment related.
It's not just, exactly.
Who are from somewhere else.
Yes.
But
I mean, really most of the people who live in Los Angeles are from somewhere else. And everyone, I think it's the weather that people really are mostly drawn to.
I don't know. I don't know. The only other, I lived in San Diego for a while, and that was really one step from heaven, down in, near
Ensign. Oh, it is beautiful there.
Mm-hmm. And I lived in Leucadia. Have you ever been to Leucadia?
No, I've only been to San Diego for Comic-Con.
It's a little town right outside of Encinitas. And it was founded by psychics.
Oh, really?
It's a really weird little place, but it's right by the beach. I mean, you know, and that is something I always, mourn not being there. That was a bad sentence.
Yeah, well, I mean, in Los Angeles, I mean, right, we're right Santa Monica. You can go to the ocean.
Sure.
I mean, it does have a lot of really great little things that you can do here if you want to see the ocean or the mountains or, I mean, you know, supposedly our claim to fame is you can sunbathe on the beach in the morning and go skiing in the evening. So.
Yes, I do remember that too. I remember not that I skied because I didn't ski, but I mean, I remember taking a ride up.
It is possible.
To Julio or Julio, however you want to pronounce it. Julian. Yeah. Remember Julian? You can drive up there and go skiing. Was it Julian?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Julian. But you could do that. I just think it was it's unfair. I think it gets bad press. It got a lot of bad press from people in the East where I grew up. And I don't know why they felt so competitive.
I admit it is very fun to make, you know, jokes of. I mean, who doesn't love the Steve Martin movie, L.A. Story?
Yeah, well, New Yorkers are, you know, New Yorkers
and
are
And he's a
cruel.
New Yorker, so I mean, he really, it's fun. Yeah.
Just cruel.
I'm good with it all. It's fine.
And
that's part of being a laid back Angelino. We don't mind being made fun of.
I hate that term. They would say, like, "Oh, everybody's so laid." And I used to meet people I knew in New York, and they used to say that to me. It's like, can't you express anything else about these people? They're so laid back. laid back. I know what they meant, but really, you know.
Yeah.
You know. What are you working on now? Right now as we speak. What are you doing? Another book, another movie, or what?
Well, right now, I mean, both of these books are out. So that's sort of my drive right now is to connect with people like yourself and other friends and readers. So I'd love to really just get the books out there, both my mom's book and my book. But the next plan is I did sign a letter of intent to direct a horror film. Ooh. So I'm excited about that. But you never know if those are going to happen. So, you know, always looking for financing. But that should be a lot of fun because it's not a script that I wrote. So it'll be very interesting to be able to interpret someone else's vision into mine and kind of collaborate in that regard. So that's probably the next big thing on my list of things to do and just keep on looking for the next adventure, really. That's one of the things that I love about being a freelancer is I can do just about anything. And you never know what's going to come up. It's exciting.
You have a carte blanche advertisement here. So
thank you.
We will always include your name and your book.
Wonderful.
On our list of things we literally demand people buy these things. because this is such a rare medium. And, from the beginning, even to now, we're not supported by anything other than the stations and the servers and the people who allow us to be on.
And, hey, that keeps it pure, right? I like that. I love the indie spirit.
Yes, and it is, as I said, still we have a fan club in Japan from way back because there's just a selective audience of people, and that's grown now because we were here before podcasts, and when podcasts came around, we really got more audiences because in the beginning, a lot of people couldn't even connect to hear the kind of stuff we do. Huh, it's really? All happened so quickly.
Now you can archive the shows, which is great because I mean I saw how far back I could go, and I'm definitely going to listen to the older shows and them out. So I love that, the fact that anyone can dive in at any time and listen to the shows, which is great. That's what, you know, I feel like the podcasting world has definitely brought about.
Yeah, now we call them, and people of the commercial stations and broadcasting people who have got into it call it, you know, call it a podcast, and nobody's listening on a podcast on a iPod anymore. Does anybody have iPods?
Well, yeah.
Anymore?
I don't know. No one
has an iPod because you got a phone.
I think there's one in the Smithsonian now.
Already, yes. And you don't have, you have phones. Everybody has a phone and I don't know what's going to happen to people's eyes, but, that's going to, or if they don't start blowing up like, those hover, you know, one of those.
Oh gosh, yeah. You must have heard story on the news about.
Well, that's the closest city to me, that happened. That made the national news about the hovercrafts. And the funny thing is, I'm watching this and I'm going, I had no idea that so many people had these things. No less, this family was not the richest family in the world. What are they doing with a hoverboard? I had no idea these things were even so available.
I don't know.
I go to Best.
Past my,
I went to Best.
Past the expiration date for that. I won't be riding a hoverboard anytime soon.
But did you know that many people had them commercially? I didn't.
No, I really didn't.
Yeah. How is this stuff getting by me? The only recently I went to Best Buy, which is one of the places. Do they have Best Buys in LA? I don't think so.
We sure do.
You do? Okay.
Yes.
So you see that? It's really the gap has closed. The commercial gap has closed. And I realized there's a drone, aisle for drones.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
I mean, like anything like, you know, someone said, you should get a drone. Why? I mean,
if you're a filmmaker, I think it's a great thing for filmmakers because I was watching an older movie today and, looking at this crane shot, and I just thought, oh man, that'd be so easy with the drone now.
Well, listen, if you're going to be directing, put that in your budget. They are not expensive.
Yeah, I know.
Compared to what you'd need for a crane and a, you know, in the old days.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, they're great.
And people are literally making shorts. And we had a guy named Charles Dennis, who's an actor and connected to many, many plays and things.
I listened to that episode. Yeah. What an interesting guy.
He made the first on a pad, on an iPad. He made the first feature film on an iPad. I don't know if that's the particular one, but yeah, he's on there. He's on there here and there. He's done some movies and stuff, but, are you like I am in terms of writing? Do you got notebooks? Do you have? Don't say got. Is my father going? You got? It's amazing.
Yes. Well, I'm somewhat evolved now. I keep my notes on my iPhone. So whenever I have a thought, I jot it down on my iPhone.
Do you trust? Do you fully trust that? I mean, anything can happen and they're all gone. Because I still have notebooks.
Never happened yet, really. No, I am sort of about downsizing, you know, now, and I just have a small apartment, but I do have a lot of books. But, I like to be very uncluttered. So I actually love the digital age.
I saw that, and it was you, right? I saw that picture you had. You says,
The
picture of all the books.
Little part of my collection.
Yeah.
With my Art Deco figurines.
I loved that.
My horror movies.
I just loved, immediately went like, well, this is the, you know, I have to, you want the shelf there with the real books, the analog, the pieces of those books with covers and pages that I went on.
Yeah.
That is great.
Well, it's the best of both worlds. I think I love the time that we live in now, actually. I think it's great, especially, you know, for boomers and Gen Xers. I mean, we really got to experience the life where you didn't have any of this, but were still young enough to be able to adapt and appreciate everything that technology has to offer. So I'm really enjoying, you know, having both. Like, I have all those books here, but I've also got several in my phone on my Kindle. So
yeah.
I can have, you know, whatever I want, which is great.
What have you seen lately that, whether it be a film or a band or a thing, what have you seen that's really knocked you out? Cause I have trouble seeing
the older you get, the more jaded you become.
Yeah, right?
There's not much to knock you out. But,
right?
But I did see a really good movie, actually with Emile Hirsch, a horror movie that's called The Autopsy of Jane Doe. That's a very stylish and super suspenseful horror film about, and it's mystery and maybe a little bit of supernatural. You never really know as the film goes on, but it's, you know, yet another independent film. So it's not getting a lot of love out there as far as the mainstream goes, but I feel really lucky to have seen that because it's pretty inventive. So I'd say, yeah, The Autopsy of Jane Doe was a really good film, one of my favorites from last year.
Wow, there's something like no one has even mentioned. I love this. I know we're going to do one of these shows. We're going to have you on with a woman named Heather Drain.
I know her from Facebook and online. Yeah,
yeah.
She's great.
She is terrific because she's a great writer, and she writes all this stuff about all these, off the beaten track,
mm-hmm.
Films and these great actors who are in them and stuff. And she knows so much about it. You guys, should really hit it off there. She doesn't have a show, but she's on mine every now and then. And we talk about, you know, everything based on these, it's not underground, right? I guess you just got to call it independent now. It's not underground anymore, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This whole independent world, which still exists, and that's why you and I know some of these people, and yet still, there's a lot more exposure in Hollywood. I remember when I was in Hollywood, there would be movies that would never make it across country or anywhere else, but you'd see them in regular theaters.
Absolutely, right. And we have so many revival theaters that are not only curated by people who really know and love film, but these theaters are just like converted to, you know, modern digital projection, but they're old movie palaces, so it's a real treat to go in and just, you know, sit on those velvet chairs and look at the Art Deco, you know, surroundings, and especially the Egyptian Theater, which is just really stunning. And they have so many old movies that are just, they're like meant to be seen on the big screen. You know, I saw Bunny Lake is Missing, the Otto Preminger movie, a couple of years back. And I had seen it on TV and I thought, it's okay. But when I saw it on the big screen, it was just a totally different experience. So that's another thing. I think for cinephiles, LA is definitely the place to be.
I was shocked and I loved it so much that there were one or two or three nights at various theaters, which were still theaters. I mean, we don't have any of those theaters in the East anymore because you go into a mall and there's six theaters and six new movies playing. But in those days when you could literally, movies. I mean, people would call me up and go, hey, listen, let's go see Dial M for Murder tonight in the theater in 3D. And I'm like, it's like, where else would they show this, you know, last
year?
And
really
the Prince.
Experience. Yeah.
The
true.
Prince
and
are always brilliant.
Well, I even love like the bad old Prince, you know, the 35 millimeters with the pops and the scratches and the burns in them, you know. You see a lot of those at the New Beverly, which now Quentin Tarantino owns. But prior to that, it was very down home, but he actually shows a lot of his 35 millimeter prints there, and it's one of the few theaters that has that apparatus still.
Because it is part of their history and everything, but I don't think it's portrayed enough or advertised enough as some of the great places where people could go and and see a movie. I remember going to a theater that where they used to show the silent films and had a real organ player.
Oh, wow.
And
yeah.
they probably still do that now and then.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. For sure.
And those things are culturally, that's real culture going. That's like walking into, you walk into a museum, but you never see that kind of stuff. And Hollywood is just so...
And that's another thing is that we have some of the best museums in the world here. And, you know, I think that LACMA has actually sort of embraced lately our sort of cinematic culture, because we've had exhibits celebrating Stanley Kubrick, which mm-hmm. was an amazing exhibition. Tim Burton, Guillermo del Toro just recently showed his entire collection in a huge, you know, like I think it was 5 or 6 room exhibit here at LA mm-hmm. County Museum, LACMA. And so I really appreciate the fact that it seems pretty much a recent advent of our museums and theaters sort of embracing our culture, which is really very gratifying.
And tourists who've never been to LA will go around the sprawling area. And mm-hmm. many of them will say things like, well, I'm having a deja vu. I've been here before because so much stuff is shot in LA. And like, you know, do they even know the Getty Museum is the Getty Museum, right? Or do they think
right.
it was the
know.
Backdrop yeah. to some Hitchcock movie, you know, or something?
Mm-hmm. It is. And yeah, I mean, there is, yeah, mm-hmm. I'm sure that there are a lot of tours and things like that that people can take, guided tours. But you know, if you're not in LA, there's a documentary called Los Angeles Plays Itself, and it's, I think, 4 hours long, but it really covers every location that's been seen in movies and goes into the background and the history of it and some places that are no longer here that are immortalized on film, like the Garden of Allah, which yeah. was torn down a long time ago. But, you know, you can still see it in films, and it's a really, really interesting, it's scholarly, but still I feel like mainstream audiences could enjoy the documentary. And that, if you're really interested in film locations, that is one of the best documentaries. Mm. Los Angeles Plays Itself.
The Egyptian Theater is still there, you're saying?
It is,
wow.
yes.
I stood online the night they started the original, Alien opened, the original.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I remember staying online because my roommate was a big film guy and worked in films. And we waited to get in on the first showing. It was midnight. They used to do things like that.
And, oh, right. Go on like the night before it opened, like on
yeah.
a Friday, you go on Thursday night.
Mm-hmm. And then once in a while, you know, and private screenings with people you knew who were in either cast and crew. There, mm-hmm. all those things that you got, because you were on the list. Hello.
Yes.
On the list. Hello. But I don't know how the industry has changed much with people, striving or working towards, you know, being in the industry one way or another. What do you know a lot of people who are out there still struggling to be actors, writers, cameramen, whatever,
Oh, that's a never-ending cycle, for sure.
The
Absolutely.
Bus comes in on La Brea in Hollywood. These people come
sure
off.
Does.
The kids come off with
it. Everyone's an actor around here. Definitely.
I remember one night walking down, what was the name of, was it Orange? Orange Street?
Mm-hmm.
Citrus. Right off of Willoughby. Because I lived right there, right off of Willoughby.
Okay, and La Palma is near there, and yeah, Highland. Okay, I know where you're talking about.
You know, it's right down the block from. Well, anyway, you know what I'm talking about. And at night, you used to, if you take a walk down those lovely streets that are just, there's no streets like them in the world. Just, there's streets, and there's houses, and you know, mm-hmm. also
and the bungalows.
And it's when it's really quiet mm-hmm. on a regular. Regular being a weekday night, you'd walk down there and you couldn't hear anything except typewriters. So many people who were waiters and cooks and parking lot attendants or what have you were in there writing their scripts, and you would hear mm-hmm. it was like better than crickets, you know, and they used to hear crickets and fire, you know, you know, all these typewriters. Everybody,
I know.
Everybody
they were so
in a
loud.
Script or a thing or what have you. And
mm-hmm.
what So you're doing well and you're happy, you're fine. When I finish the book, you're going to be back on and we're going to talk.
Oh, okay.
More.
I will have. Yeah, we can talk about the rest.
I'll have tons of questions for that.
I feel like it was just the right time in my life to look back on things. I feel like I did definitely start from one place and of course it's not ended, but you know, there is a certain through line to the story, which is important to me also having written fiction, you know, I want it to have like a beginning, middle and end, which it does. So yeah, I'm really happy and I look forward to continuing on my creative journey, so to speak.
See, you're still young.
Don't see me doing anything different.
You're still so young and you have, but you do have a storied past. And that's what I think that gives you a certain license to write the kind of book you wrote. I mean, there are as well as I do that there were publishers, there are probably still publishers who do this. They go out and try to get a book from somebody who's got a name because they know the name's going to sell the book. They don't really care. Write about you. They don't care what you're going to write, you know?
Yeah.
And so many of those books are real, I'm just saying, real crap. And these people have no right to be writing a autobiography.
I remember what was it? The Olsen twins wrote their autobiography when they were 19 or
something.
Like,
yeah, there you go.
Okay.
I mean, I understand commercialism and I understand how they, you know, but yours is different. I'm saying this also for everybody listening to understand that, there's lots of I refuse to write like I said, I'm not going to write any kiss and tell books. And
you should write it, and then you know when you pass over, someone publish it.
Why leave a bad taste in people's mouth when they think of me? You know, I just use my humor for my so I you know I take things that really happened and make them screw them up, but. So many people, but yours, I'm saying this because your stuff is, aside from being well written and, it's well written in a way that I can't write any longer. What I loved about it was there's your voice in writing, is perky and you look back at, you know, stuff and the way you say it, I mean, you don't turn phrases with cliches, and you know where to drop certain, expressions and stuff. So I really felt like you were talking to me.
Thank you. Yeah, I do. I love the conversational tone.
I can't do that.
To each their own. We all have our own talents.
But, you know, I enjoy that and it's going to, allow me to get through it. I was moving along pretty quickly and then we're going to, talk about it again. Have you been, on any other shows? Can I tout your name around and maybe you can, if there's anybody wants to have you on, try to sell some more books here and there?
That would be great. You know? Yeah, I was just recently on the Damn Dirty Geeks podcast, which was fun.
Okay.
I actually have not yet been on any. You're my first.
I am going to,
to talk about this book.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. We don't want to wind up in one of those books, in the New Confidential or the Weekly World News.
Right.
Maybe we do. I don't know. Maybe that would help sell some books. Maybe we should start our own. That's what it is. That's what we should do. I'm going to send your, a link, and your email to a number. Believe me, it'll go to people who do.
Oh, thank you. That'd be great. I don't have some of those contacts.
I'll get you some and it'll
meet some folks. Yeah.
And you'll be able to get the word around because although I am the first and obviously the most popular of all these, these jerks who do this stuff.
My fave.
Because although I was the first to come here from real broadcasting. See, that was the big catch. When they got me, they was like, "Hey, you already did this. You've done real radio, so come here and do this." But I'll get you a number of people, and I know they have audiences and everything. You'll definitely get some books, passed around.
Oh, thank you.
Sold is the key word here. Sold, and I have all your statistics and your all your info and data. What I mean, and
you do,
and we'll get you on again. And you know, if you think of anything you'd like to talk about, and this seems to be the theater that you can converse about it to this audience, then please get in touch with me. Let's just stay in touch. And we'll have you on again. I would really like to have you on with Heather.
With Heather. Yeah. Wouldn't that be fun? I love that.
If I could, I got to find, she's busy and what have you, but I think this would, we'll get her again. She's been meaning to be on again anyway, so we could talk about any number of those type of things. And she probably knows a lot more about you. And you know what? That she's one of the people who, I mean, not that she has a show, but she has a blog and she does a lot of writing and she knows a lot of people who, she has fans and everything, and you should definitely be one of the people that she talks. You might even get a big interview on her blog and stuff. So
that would be incredible. I will definitely reach out.
So we will get more SLW activity going here.
Yes. Now you can't get rid of me.
Well, who wants to? But anyway, let's thank you very much, Stacy,
tonight.
And I'll just say see you soon because we will have you on again. Have a good, healthy night and everything. And keep us posted too you know, what's going on. I'm on your mailing list and you're on mine. Okay, dear?
Yep.
Thank you very much. Hey, any chance, where does your father now live?
He lives in Seattle, Washington, so that's where he's from. He's like the original grunge musician, so he's there, and he's producing bands, and he's still, he's 84 years old now, but he's still loving the music world, so he's still in it, even though he's not touring anymore.
Yeah, great. Well, we'll learn more about that and do some adventure stuff and everything, too.
Okay.
I'm sure that legacy is something you're proud to pass on to millennials.
Yep.
Okay. Bonsoir, my dear.
Goodbye.
And we will definitely be in touch. Thank you so much for being here.
Okay.
Bye. Stacy Lane Wilson. And it sounded like I was kissing up to her because I was. She's great. And you know, there's so few people you meet in life who have similar, I don't want to say, I hate using the word. I hate using roots. What's wrong with me? What's wrong with me? My name is Frank Cotullo, the man whose name adorns the title of the show. You see how quickly it goes when we're in a munificent conversation with that. Coming up, for those of you listening to us live, not relived, that's not what I called it. Boy, even when I put myself in a different position sitting, I have a whole different angle on this whole thing. I, the third man, Frank Cotullo. Again, by the way, So LA is the name of the book. I guess you could just go to, put it in and go to StacyLaneWilson.com and get Stacy Lane Wilson's, read the reel, do all that stuff. And you'll have some fun there too. In any event, in all events, and certainly in this event, it's me, Frank Cotullo, the man whose name adorns the title of the show. And I am with you, and we will be back again next week with some more stuff. That'll be great. You'll see. You'll see. Indeed, indeed, indeed. My. So go buy the books, all the books, do all the things, listen to the shows. Those of you listening live, as I said, Savino Veritas is following. And those of you who are listening and Savino Veritas follows me, here comes Savino Veritas. If not, go to juicetalk.com, get the archives. Stacy had a ball with it. What am I? Cotullo Chronicles at blogspot.com. The books at Amazon and the videos at YouTube. Yeah, we have some talk about that coming up again, too. In the meantime, in between time, good night, Mrs. Ernstwhile, wherever you may be located. I will be back again. Bye. And so will everyone. Keep watching the skies. Whatever you do, keep watching the skies. Not this guy's, the skies. Keep watching this guy, too. I'll be back again. I've said enough. I have nothing more to say.